Anesthesia had led Richard into a small park on the south side of the bridge, then down some stone steps set beside a wall. She relit her candle in a bottle, and then she opened a workman's door and closed it behind them. They went down some steps with the darkness all around them.
"There's a girl named Dor," said Richard. "She's a bit younger than you. Do you know her?"
"The Lady Dor? I know who she is.
So which, barony is she part of?"
"No barony. She's of the House of the Arch. Her family used to be very important."
"Used to be? Why did they stop?"
"Somebody killed them."
"Yes." He remembered the Marquis saying something about that now.
A rat ran across their path. Anesthesia stopped on the steps and performed a deep curtsy. The rat paused.
"Sire,"
she said to the rat.
"Hi,"
said Richard. The rat looked at them for a heartbeat, then it darted off down the steps.
"So," said Richard, "what is a floating market?"
"It's very big,"
she said,
"but rat speakers hardly ever need to go to the market, to tell the truth."
She hesitated.
"Nah, you'll laugh at me."
"I won't,"
said Richard, honestly.
"Well," said the thin girl, "I'm a little scared."
"Scared of the market?"
They had reached the bottom of the steps. Anesthesia hesitated and then turned left.
"Oh no, there's a truce in the market. If anyone hurt anyone there, the whole of London below will be down on them like a ton of sewage."
"So what are you scared of?"
"Getting there. They hold it in a different place every time. It moves around. And to get to the place it'll be tonight..."
She fingered the quartz beads around her neck nervously.
"We'll have to go through a really nasty neighbourhood."
She did sound scared. Richard suppressed the urge to put an arm around her.
"And where would that be?"
he asked. She turned to him, pushed the hair from her eyes and told him.
"Knightsbridge?"
repeated Richard, and he began to chuckle, gently. The girl turned away.
"See," she said. "I said you'd laugh."
The deep tunnels had been dug in the early days of the Second World War. Troops had been quartered there in their thousands, their waste needing to be pumped up by compressed air to the level of the sewers far above. Both sides of the tunnels had been lined with metal bunk beds for the troops to sleep on. There had been plans to assimilate the tunnels into a high-speed extension to the underground system, but these plans came to nothing. And when the war ended, the bunk beds had stayed in the tunnels, and on their wire bases cardboard boxes were stored, each box filled with letters and files and papers, secrets of the dullest kind, stored down deep to be forgotten. Economies had closed the deep tunnels completely in the early 1990s. The boxes of secrets were removed to be scanned and stored on computers, or shredded, or burned. Varney made his home in the deepest of the deep tunnels, far beneath Camden Town Tube. He had piled abandoned metal bunk beds in front of the only entrance. Then he had decorated. Varney liked weapons. He made his own out of whatever he could find, or take, or steal. Parts of cars and rescued bits of machinery, which he turned into hooks and shivs, crossbows and arbalests, small mangonels and trebuchets for breaking walls, cudgels, glaives and knobkerries. They hung on the wall of the deep tunnel, or sat in corners, looking unfriendly. Varney looked like a bull might look, if the bull were to be shaved, dehorned, covered in tattoos, and had suffered from complete dental breakdown. Also, he snored. The oil lamp next to his head was turned down low. Varney slept on a pile of rags, snoring and snuffling, with the hilt of a homemade two-bladed sword on the ground beside his hand. A hand turned up the oil lamp. Varney had the two-bladed sword in his hand and was on his feet almost before his eyes were open. He blinked, stared around him. There was no one there. Nothing had disturbed the pile of bunk beds blocking the door. He began to lower the sword. A voice said, "Psst!" "Huh?" said Varney.
"Surprise!"
said Mr. Croup, stepping into the light. Varney took a step back. A mistake. There was a knife at his temple, the point of the blade next to his eye.
"Further movements are not recommended," said Mr. Croup, helpfully. "Mr. Vandemar might have a little accident with his old toad sticker. Most accidents do occur in the home. Is that not so, Mr. Vandemar?"
"I don't trust statistics," said Mr. Vandemar's blank voice.
A gloved hand reached down from behind Varney, crushed his sword, and dropped the twisted thing to the floor.
"How are you, Varney?" asked Mr. Croup. "Well, we trust, yes, in fine form, fetlock and fettle for the market tonight. Do you know who we are?"
Varney did the nearest thing he could to a nod that didn't actually involve moving any muscles. He knew who Croup and Vandemar were. His eyes were searching the walls. Yes, there, the Morning Star, a spiked wooden ball studded with nails on a chain in the far corner of the room.
"There is talk that a certain young lady will be auditioning bodyguards this evening. Had you thought of trying out for the task?"
Mr. Croup picked at his tombstone teeth.
"Enunciate clearly."
Varney picked up the Morning Star with his mind. It was his knack. Gentle now, slowly. He edged it off the hook and pulled it up toward the top of the tunnel arch. With his mouth, he said,
"Varney's the best bravo and guard in the underside. They say I'm the best since Hunter's Day."
Varney mentally positioned the Morning Star in the shadows above and behind Mr. Croup's head. He would crush Croup's skull first, then he'd take Vandemar. The Morning Star plunged towards Mr. Croup's head. Varney flung himself down, away from the knife blade at his eye. Mr. Croup did not look up. He did not turn. He simply moved his head obscenely fast, and the Morning Star crashed past him into the floor, where it threw up chips of brick and concrete. Mr. Vandemar picked Varney up with one hand.
"Hurt him?" he asked his partner.
Mr. Croup shook his head. "Not yet." And to Varney, he said,
"Not bad. So, best bravo and guard, we want you to get yourself to the market tonight. We want you to do whatever you have to become that certain young lady's personal bodyguard. Then when you get the job, one thing you don't forget. You may guard her from the rest of the world, but when we want her, we take her. Got it?"
Varney ran his tongue over the wreck of his teeth.
"Are you bribing me?" he asked.
Mr. Vandemar had picked up the Morning Star. He was pulling the chain apart with his free hand, link by link, and dropping the bits of twisted metal onto the floor. "Chink."
"No,"
said Mr. Vandemar.
"Chink." "We're intimidating you."
"Chink."
"And if you don't do what Mr. Croup says, we're..."
"Chink."
"Hurting you."
"Chink."
"Very badly before we're..."
"Chink."
"Killing you. Even badlier."
"Ah," said Varney. "Then I'm working for you, aren't I?" "Yes, you are," said Mr. Croup. I'm afraid we don't have any redeeming features.
That doesn't bother me, said Varney.
Good, said Mr. Croup.
Welcome aboard.